Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin in a moment and speak with a former senior policy advisor to the Secretary of Energy who recently wrote an op-ed in the Los Angeles Times, Unsafe at Any Reactor. Robert Alvarez joins us to discuss the nuclear disaster in Japan and the growing risk from uncontained radioactive contamination. Then we'll go to Cairo to talk with Mohamed Bamyeh, who wrote a recent article at the Islamic intellectual site Mufta.org. Is the 2011 Libyan revolution an exception? Along with discussing Libya, we'll also talk about political events in Egypt. Then finally, we'll talk with Pulitzer Prize-winning former New York Times war correspondent Chris Hedges about the corporate capture of not just the media, but of American politics, culture, and the economy. He is a regular columnist at truthdig.com, where he recently published an article, The Collapse of Globalism. Joining me now is Robert Alvarez, who is a senior fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He directs the IPS's nuclear energy project. He served as a senior policy advisor to the Secretary of Energy and as a deputy assistant secretary of energy from 1993 to 1999. He's one of the nation's foremost experts on military and civilian nuclear energy, and you can find his recent work, including his op-ed for the Los Angeles Times, Unsafe at Any Reactor, at ips-dc.org. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Alvarez.
Thank you for having me on your show.
It does appear that the nuclear disaster in Japan continually, I wouldn't say it gets worse, but because there's been such a paucity of information, such confusion between the government and the TEPCO, the Tokyo Power Authority, and now the head of TEPCO is taking hospital leave. So we still don't know the full extent of the contamination, but what we do know is pretty shocking, isn't it?
Well, I think that the accident is of such a magnitude and of such complexity and danger that they're still not out of the woods. And they're struggling desperately to try to gain control over the situation.
So when we learn that a couple of the workers were contaminated by the waste water that apparently was sloshing around in Reactor 3, and that is fueled by MOX fuel, which has plutonium in it, and, and the indication is that the core is exposed there because the levels were so high. My question is, what is happening to all that seawater that is so highly radioactive? Where does it go?
Well, they were using seawater to provide coolant for the reactor in the pools. And so I think it was either from runoff or discharges from the reactor and the pools.
But is this water going directly into the ocean because of the extraordinary high content of radioactive iodine that's been detected in the ocean?
Well, it's probably water that's come in contact with the radioactive core in the fuel rods.
And so it's leaking from the plant into the ocean?
I think that as a possibility you cannot rule out.
So we don't really know whether this water that is being sprayed constantly on this incredibly hot core, we don't know where that runoff is going.
It's a big question. I think that we are operating on fragmentary information. We don't have a complete picture of what's going on. I think the emergency responders are also operating with not all that much information about what's ahead of them. I think the one thing you can say about what's going on there is that it's a surprise if it isn't a surprise.
Do you think this is in any way complicated by Japan's political culture, where the prime minister tends to be a kind of political hack that's put in there by the backroom power brokers in the Liberal Democratic Party? And he's been constantly caught by surprise. His poll numbers are embarrassingly low. And now you've got the head of the Tokyo Power sort of slipping off to hospital.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I can speculate on that. But what I can say is that the Japanese nuclear industry and other nuclear industries have a reputation for operating in secrecy and isolation from the public. And they are usually late in providing bad news, and usually the bad news is usually burnished before it gets out.
In general, though, I've often asked, had Victor Galinsky on recently and other people that, like yourself who've had a long career in nuclear energy, both military and civilian, there is this sense that the nuclear power industry or the lobby, if you will, is kind of like Lazarus. It comes back after Three Mile Island, it comes back after Chernobyl, and it may come out back after this. What's your sense on it? Because I take it that nuclear power will continue unabated in China and India, But what's its fate and future in the United States, do you think,
Robert? Well, Albers? I think that the so-called renaissance that has been widely touted in the United States for the past several years is gone. I mean, I think that it's the prospects of building new reactors in the United States are becoming increasingly dim. And they were dim even before this terrible accident. And the main reason is that the private investment has refused to have anything to do with nuclear power for over 30 years. And they still won't touch it with a 10-foot pole because of the very significant financial risks associated with building and operating these plants. So the only way that nuclear power could have a renaissance in the United States is if they could have unfettered access to the U.S. Treasury. And we're now in a stage in our political history, I guess, where there are tremendous pressures to cut federal spending and not to open the doors wide open to a special interest like this.
But as it stands now, of course, the Japanese situation could take years to resolve. The Japanese authorities have said that the four reactors, 1, 2, 3, and 4, will be permanently shut down. They are now talking about putting some kind of a blanket over it, a bit like the sarcophagus, I imagine, at Chernobyl. Do you have any understanding about what they plan to do to entomb these reactors?
Well, I think that whatever they do is going to have to be revisited sometime in the near future, because if they don't remove the major concentrations of long-lived radioactivity from that site, it's bound to leach out into the ocean and to the land nearby where there are a lot of people.
Well, the thing that the discussion we had earlier, Robert Alvarez, about the highly radioactive seawater that's been poured over this exposed core. The figure that I heard was that there are hundreds of tons of this water.
I think it's more in the order of several thousands of tons.
Several thousands tons of water, and we don't know where that water's gone, right?
Well, I think that you can assume that a lot of water was used to try to cool the reactors and the fuel ponds. A great deal of that water is likely to have been contaminated and have either been directly discharged through pipelines or from runoff from the site into the ocean.
And what would be that's pretty bad in itself. Obviously, a better alternative would be to somehow catch it all and store it. And would that be your analysis?
Well, I think in fairness to what's going on there, I'm sure that had they thought they had to resort to this rather desperate, what I referred to in the past as a Hail Mary gesture, they might have had the contingencies to do that, but they don't. And so this is what, they're stuck with.
And what do you do with highly radioactive seawater? What would be
the only thing you can do is, if it's been poured into the ocean, is hope it is diluted and decays.
And if it's kept in ponds?
You can't just dump that stuff in the ocean. I think that whatever the wastewater they have generated, that they do have some sort of containment over, they're going to have to decontaminate that liquid and try to dispose of the radioactivity in some other place.
But it would, if it's kept in big pools, have the ability to evaporate, and that would that not bring radioactivity up into the atmosphere?
To a certain extent. I assume that the cooling ponds and things like that, there's been evaporation going on, and there may be even possibility of drainage. But still, I think that they're going to have to decontaminate that water, probably using ion exchange equipment and the like, to try to remove as much radioactivity from the water as possible before it can be dumped.
So I guess in a way, in a very sort of hideously ironic way, Robert Alvarez, that this accident and this part of the accident, which we're talking about, is how do they get rid of the waste, is a kind of broader metaphor for the nuclear power problem and the weapons problem in the first place, which is, what do you do about the waste?
Well, I mean, this is, you know, something that's an extreme example of what might go wrong and what kind of environmental safety and health legacy you leave behind, because, you know, I think that what we're looking at is something that's going to prove hazardous to a large number of people for a very long time, and that's just going to be another sort of another unthinkable of the nuclear age.
And what we're left with thinking about here is, from this interview, Robert Alvarez, is that there are thousands of tons of highly contaminated water that nobody knows where it is and nobody knows what to do with it.
Well, I also, you have to consider that there's also hundreds of tons of highly irradiated spent fuel or melted fuel, which has fantastically larger concentrations of radioactivity in it than that water.
And that's
the material
really,
that's going to be the most challenging of all.
And I believe that stays hot for years. Is that right?
Well, it varies. I mean, you know, the radioactivity in this spent fuel, after 20 or so years, you're really stuck with a very large amount of long-lived radioactivity.
But, I mean, just in terms of being able to get to it and contain it, it's incredibly hot temperature-wise, isn't it, for a long time?
Well, it's thermally hot, and it's also, it's intensely radioactive.
Sure.
So, it didn't surprise me, and it saddened me to hear that workers are now having to face essentially life-threatening radiation doses in order to try to stabilize this problem. I mean, these are people who are doing very heroic things.
Well, and of course, they were equally heroic in Chernobyl as well. So just in closing, Robert Alvarez, given your long experience in nuclear power and weapons, having been a senior policy advisor to the Secretary of Energy and the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Energy, how would you see this debate? Because the president just yesterday addressed the issue of energy independence. It seems like the environmental movement, to some extent, drank the Kool-Aid of nuclear power because they thought it was a solution to global warming. Do you think there's going to be some fresh thinking here?
I think there's no doubt about that. I think that there's, you know, despite the rhetoric and supportive words about nuclear power from some of our political leaders, make no mistake, there is a very serious reassessment going on inside of the government. Especially about the safety of the operation of our existing reactors. The other situation is, you know, in terms of new reactors, I think that as I said, those prospects are very, very dim because one, these reactors, their estimated costs are very high, you know, somewhere on the order of $10 billion. And two, private investment will not have anything to do with them. So the taxpayer has to bear the financial burden in terms of extending the loan and taking the risk if the loan fails. So those are really not the best ingredients for a nuclear renaissance, to put it mildly. And I think that the role of nuclear power in coming to terms with things like global warming and our dependence on foreign sources of oil and those problems, the environmental problems associated and safety and health problems associated with consuming and producing energy. Nuclear power, I think, is so expensive, setting aside its catastrophic potential, which has been unfolding in Japan. A colleague of mine likened it to trying to come to terms with world hunger by serving caviar.
Well, I thank you for joining us on the, thank you for that note of irony there, Robert Alvarez, and I thank you for joining us in Los Angeles.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Alvarez, who was Senior Policy Advisor to the Secretary of Energy and Deputy Assistant Secretary of Energy. His recent writing, and particularly the op-ed he wrote for the Los Angeles Times called Unsafe at Any Reactor, is available at ips-dc.org. Let's take a brief station break, and then we'll go to Cairo to talk about the Libyan revolution.
They're gonna build them even though we say no. They are the rulers, they say which way to go. We are the people. They are nuclear madness. Ha, ha, ha. Three Mile Island was only the start of something bigger. They're gonna blow us apart. We are the people.